Quiet Disruptors, Creating Change Without Shouting. Written and read by me, Sue Hetherington. Chapter 18, Find Your Voice. Our voice is much more than how we sound. It's what we have to say and the way we choose to express it. It changes over time. And yes, sometimes we have to intentionally dig it out because it's become buried in layers of should, ought, fear, and shame. This is about releasing what is already there within you, not going off and finding a new one. In becoming the change we want to see, many avenues can help us explore our voice with confidence. Find your story. Find your courage. Find your tone. Find your rhythm. Find your medium. Think of this as a tasting menu. There's a lot you can explore further. These are simply pointers to munch on and make notes as you go. And take your time. Enjoy the exploration. This isn't a race or a test, and it will probably be here in some form for the rest of your life. Find your story. We all love a good story. It takes us on an emotional journey, helps us to connect with others and make sense of the world around us. Our own story is crucial in helping us find our voice, the real me, and what makes me tick. Without it, we're just copying someone else and it's shallow, empty and doesn't ring true. Or we struggle to find the right words or actions, fearful that we might get it wrong, because it's not essentially us, it's someone else's story. We need to know why the change we want to see is so important to us, not just what it looks like. 1. Who am I? As Bernadette Jiwa helpfully reminds us, when you know who you are, you don't have to compete. So who were you before someone told you who you should be? This isn't about creating, but revealing your identity, and that means being honest with yourself and others. Letting go of things that were put on you, perhaps for the best of intentions, but really don't fit. 2. What brings me joy? Sean Askenozie talks about gathering your prouds and celebrating your vocation. When you look back over your life, what are the moments you're proud of, or when you felt profound joy and satisfaction? Are there clues here? 3. Where were my diamonds formed? Again, there is great learning from Sean's story. He recognised that the place where diamonds are formed is in the crucible of pains. Things that affect us deeply not only shape who we are, but also motivate us to make a difference. What are you holding in your hands or heart that few others have ever experienced? 4. What is the me-shaped hole in the world? For years, I have carried a phrase from Rob Bell around with me about being open to your role in the ongoing creation of the world. This is a powerful invitation to find the space that only you can occupy, doing what only you can do by being who you are, honestly and fully. Only you can be you, and you have a distinctive contribution to make. You just might not have recognised it yet. 5. What pushes my buttons? Passion and sensitivity are close cousins. These are the things that frequently trigger our emotions and speak volumes. Where do your triggers show up? Are there situations that make you feel particularly excited or, conversely, rejected? These aren't always big things and maybe are about how we handle what happens around us in our everyday lives. Over time, patterns emerge, but we don't always notice them until we do. Find your courage. There's a big difference between seeing what could be different and doing something about it, speaking up and changing the conversation. Where we find our courage has a significant part to play, and it will be different for each of us. 1. What naturally paralyzes me? This is swimming against our own tide. Knowing what frequently blocks me is key to unlocking my bravery. We all gravitate to one of the three centers of intelligence, our innate knowers, the place where we know what we know. Head or intellectual, where thinking is dominant. Heart or feeling, where emotions are dominant. Body or gut, where instincts are dominant. These usually serve us well. However, we can over-rely on them when we're in a challenging position and become locked up. Let's break through. 2. How can I choose to be present over being perfect? This is about imperfect people choosing to be fully present in an imperfect world and make it better by doing so. It involves giving up chasing illusions or being driven by perfection long enough to be here, right now, in an uncomfortable, messy, glorious reality. And letting go long enough to enjoy it, because there won't be another day just like today, ever. The Japanese practices of wasisabi and kintsugi offer brilliant insights if you want further encouragement to shift your mindset. 3. What enables me to start where I am? Those of us who are passionate about making a difference often want to change everything. I mean, the whole world. But making a tangible and sustainable difference is usually one step at a time. We do need audacious ambition, but we don't have to change the world in one go. The pressure to be big all the time is counterproductive. And to be a superhero is so yesterday. Subconsciously, it could be our get-out clause, a way of hiding. 4. What can I do to face my fear? Avoiding failure is a fool's game and takes you nowhere, and quiet disruptors are not fools. Therefore, let's lean into, rather than away from, our vulnerabilities and fears, knowing that if we do trip up, at least we're facing in the right direction, and we've moved forward, even if it's on our knees. Face your fear and do it anyway. 5. How can I remember that we're all just people? Intellectually, we may not buy into we're all equal, but some are more equal than others. But emotionally, we fall for it so often. What are the telltale signs? Often, it is when we're too close for comfort and we find we're competing or feeling shut down. That's when we need to face up to intimidation and remember that we're all just people. We all brush our teeth and all that stuff. We all started small and we'll all die eventually. But in the meantime, we can do some great things. Find your tone. Being heard isn't just about our words, it's also the effect of our tone. How we are encountered and experienced as thoughtful and creative change makers. Therefore, how we make others feel is as important as what we say. For example, are we authentic and congruent? Do we engage or just mumble from the sidelines? And are we aware of difference and can we cross boundaries? 1. Where can I practice being present? We can pretend to care, but we can't pretend to show up. Ashley Judd, quoted by Simon Sinek on Twitter. As thoughtful and creative change makers, we have the potential to make a different kind of difference. We don't have to crash around or walk over people until we force the change we want to see. Instead, if we want to build trust and the platform for change, we have to show up in person, bringing all that we are, and this takes intentional practice. 2. Who are we doing this for? Being intentional about who we're here for affects how we're experienced. When we know why we're seeking change, we know who we're doing it for, because this isn't an abstract idea. It has legs attached to bodies. This enables us to be clear about who we're speaking to, and also have a greater sense of what it's like to be in their shoes. It's called empathy. 3. How can I build bridges for a better world? To bridge silos of whatever sort, we need to be comfortable being at the boundary. However, this is difficult to do if we think our world is the only world. Sometimes we build bridges for us to cross, and sometimes it's for others to make the journey. Either way, it requires connection across differences and letting go of assumptions about the world that we inhabit. Being intentional about how we look at situations and issues, but also recognizing that we may be misunderstood, so watching our tone. 4. How can I cultivate more questions than answers? Good questions are powerful. Offered with thought and generosity of spirit, they enable change rather than cause a reaction. In posing questions, we are inviting others on the journey rather than forcing an unchallengeable destination on them, and they're much more likely to come with us. This is a fertile area to play with, because questions are non-threatening if asked with genuine curiosity. 5. How can I know when to draw the line? If we are seeking change, then we are starting from the belief that how things are could be better. However, we also need to know when enough is enough. There is a line to draw, and it's ours to own. This aspect of developing our tone as quiet disruptors is essential. Where we draw the line and how we hold it will significantly affect how people experience us. It's not just about the words. If our emotions dominate, we can become unhealthy and people can't hear us. However, without them, we become less than ourselves and our voice is weak and anemic. Find your rhythm. Wherever we look, there are rhythms and cycles. In nature, in life, in science and the arts, in the way people are together in civilizations and cultures. Therefore, why do we assume we can just keep going like a machine, only stopping to ask if we're efficient enough? Uncovering our voice also means paying attention to our rhythms, the cycles that sustain us, and noticing when we're out of step. Here are 5 practices that will help us find and restore our unique sense of rhythm. Embedding sustainable good habits in our lives so that our voice can become clearer. 1. What is a healthy way to spend my time? How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. What we do with this hour and that one is what we are doing. So says Annie Dillard in her book, The Writing Life. It's astonishing what we get used to and assume is normal. The current default of being on all the time has its costs. However, the answer isn't to withdraw and become a hermit or try and shout over the noise. Instead, we can individually rediscover a daily rhythm and environment that enables us to thrive and cultivate our voice, because one size does not fit all. When and where we do our best work is an indicator, and being intentional about how to increase our creativity and curiosity all contribute to a fruitful pattern. 2. How can I build healthy seasons in my life? Most of us are relatively cushioned from the effects of natural seasons. We live in well-built houses with controllable heating. We are used to being able to access what we want, when we want, without waiting too long. We have become divorced from a healthy sense of the cycles of life and often fail to recognise when we need to embrace a seasonal shift if we're to thrive. These seasonal triggers can be promoted by a mixture of external factors and internal responses, sometimes getting louder until we take notice. 3. How can I establish a healthy momentum? I really appreciate the insight that self-discovery is a journey, not a moment. Journeys, like rhythm, have momentum. There is a sense of flow, which might vary over time, but doesn't stop. Likewise, uncovering our voice has momentum. The process of experimenting and learning, of changing gear or shifting direction over time. But it's much harder to get started or change course if we're stationary. Sometimes we simply get stuck, especially when the obstacles seem too big. Here are some unblocking tips. What is the smallest thing you can do? Dan Pink. What is the next right thing? Rather than trying to solve the whole. Why is this the next best move? Bernadette Chiwa. Write till you make sense of it. Ben Horowitz. 4. Where can I develop the rhythm of walking? Solvitur ambulando. It is solved by walking. Augustine of Hippo and his mates around that time, 4th century, understood something profound. Movement unlocks our minds. However, we live such sedentary lives that we've lost the habit, the rhythm of walking. Yet it frees us up in ways that scientists are only now discovering. Go for a walk, outdoors if possible, as it awakens our senses in a way that interiors and air-conditioned environments rarely do. But don't try to resolve your issue, just enjoy the stroll. Notice what's around you. See what catches your attention. Breathe more deeply. Smile. Even just a walk away from your desk can be beneficial. I promise. 5. What must I do to build in gaps and spaces? Have you noticed how the gaps or spaces define what we hear as much as the notes or words? Pauses are essential, not just to draw breath. They give nuance and meaning, helping us interpret what we experience. For those of us developing our voice, the way we pause and cultivate life-giving habits is as important as anything else we can do. The poet Mary Oliver's instructions for life are brilliant. Pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. We also need to restore our souls, because the kind of voice we're talking about here isn't concerned with the repetition of information. It's the voice of a thoughtful and creative change maker, a quiet disruptor, and it's not shallow. Find your medium. The amazing thing about human beings is that we're so different. How we express ourselves, how we are present, and how we inspire and influence others takes many forms. My words might be your pictures or actions. Finding what fits us best is part of finding our voice and building a platform to use it, and it may not be what first comes to mind. We may have been raised to value some forms of expression more highly than others. There are all sorts of layers in here, from gender and age to ethnicity and geography. The important thing is that we take time to peel off the layers that may be obscuring what our true voice sounds or looks like. Otherwise, our voice may be lacking in resonance and clarity, and we won't be fulfilled in using it. 1. What clues are evident in your story? Are there patterns in your story that suggest how you might express yourself, that suggest a good fit? For example, given their story in Chapter 3, it's not at all surprising that David and Claire Hyatt are now involved with Makers and Mavericks. 2. Where is your home territory? The particular expressions of quiet disruption that we covered earlier in this book are curiosity, creativity, and courageous connection. It's highly likely that you found yourself naturally drawn towards one or more of these, rather than equally to all three. What is that telling you about your natural space for disruption and the medium that might work best there? 3. Where do you already have trust and attention? What are some of the ways in which you're currently using your voice, even in a small measure? Is there evidence that you are already being heard? Where is your reputation? And are others trusting what they hear, even if it unsettles them? Good. Pay attention. 4. What seasons of work and life are you in right now? This is a difficult but important question to ask. We need to walk in reality, infused with conviction and ambition. This isn't a race, nor is it a test. We need to be wise and recognize the seasons we're in. This will help shape what medium we develop. 5. Are there forms of expression you have a secret desire to try out? Yes, do permit yourself to explore, to bring ways of expressing yourself out of the closet and try them on for size. They may be dusty or underdeveloped and require care and attention. But nobody's stopping you, and the likelihood is that even if this is not your significant public medium, it's useful to you as a means of exploring what you want to say and the change you're seeking to make. Ultimately, you need to experiment. Try things out and see how they land. Talk with people who know you and believe in you. Listen to what they have to say. Finding our voice is not a one-off activity. It takes time to grow and mature. It also takes courage to step out and push the boundaries, to choose not to settle and risk feeling uncomfortable, and even to fail, to become the change we want to see. Thank you for listening to Quiet Disruptors. I hope it's inspired, encouraged, and even provoked you to become the change you want to see. If it has, then great. Please share it. Buy the book or post a review. It all helps. So, until we meet again, go gently and speak softly about the things that matter, because the world is waiting for you.